I don't know. It just seems to me like God just sends flowers into our garden. And a few years ago, probably 20 years ago, God sent this young man in, and I didn't recognize him at first as being a flower in God's garden. I thought he might be, you know, one of those. No, he would never be a thorn. I didn't mean to say thorn, did I? No, it's a plain, good, wonderful, loving man who not only wanted to work for God just slightly, he studied it in college. He took his college years to study and learn about the Bible. Now, most everyone here, except a handful of you, most all of you have already met him. But if not, get ready for this treat. It's a treat for me anyway. I like it. I like our Dan Hare.
Thank you.
Love you, Dan.
Love you, too. Let's see, where do you... This is not an official church thing, so I don't tell some of the board members. I'll get in trouble. Okay. So I was making my notes, and I always get a little nervous before you talk. So I'm down at the beach, and on my little iPhone deal. So these are my notes. And so hopefully we'll have some fun tonight. You know... It is always fun to talk to you guys because, you know, this is like such a great family. And we're on this journey together and we learn together and we go through the bumps and bruises and ups and downs. And there's really no right and wrong. There's really about kind of when you fall down, just get up and keep on going forward. And you've got a group of people around you that love you regardless. And I think that's a pretty special environment that we get to share here at this church. I shared last night the story, and I think it's a cool story, so I want to share it again. My cousin Raymond was 76 when he passed. He passed back in December, and Ray had been to the church a few times. Lived at my house 2000 to 2005 sort of thing after he retired from IBM. And he was kind of like a... he was a cousin, a brother. He was my chef a lot of the times. When I'd have a big party for a meet and greet for a director, when I had the Independent Film Society, he would be the one cleaning up. I got all the glory, and he got to clean up, and he said he was totally fine with it and loved it. I haven't really had a big party since he left because nobody was there to clean up. But he passed away in December, and... one of his wishes was that half of his ashes would be spread at sea at Moonlight Beach up in Encinitas, where he loved so much. So finally the ashes came and coordinated a time with his best friend Brian. And so we met up on Sunday morning at 9 o'clock, and there were just three of us, Brian, myself, and Jerry, another friend. And Brian... is a guy who drives the trolley tour bus deal around the deal. And he says, you know, you guys, I got to tell you this really interesting thing that happened to me yesterday when I was working. He says, when the passengers get off the trolley, they have a comment card, and they can either mail it in or they can hand it to me, and I'll hand it to management on comments or how we can improve and that sort of thing. And that came up and handed me his card and said, you know, go ahead and give that in. And I guess he paused for a second and he looked down and there was one word on it. And it was Ray, my cousin's name. No comment. It just said Ray. And I thought, whoa, that's pretty cool. And the thing that, in a way, that was very, very cool about it is that kind of in the belief system that we experience here is that the veil between the other world and this world that we can communicate. And it was so funny because, you know, I've been through, I was an Episcopal when I was little kid, because you're confirmed at something, and then I was a Baptist and a born again, and I have no bad feelings, all good. And then as I grew in my faith and my walk and my life evolved, and my father, who I was estranged from, passed away, I was coincidentally, no coincidence at all, I met a gal, Georgina, some 14 years ago, who invited me to the church, and I've been coming ever since. And so I told this story to one of my longest best friends, and he didn't believe in this stuff. I mean, he's more of a fundamentalist, and I kind of laughed at him. I said, so he knew Ray, and I told him the story, and I said, the only thing on the card was Ray. And he looked at me and like, what are you going to say? And I says, so what do you think? And he starts going into all these explanations of, well, maybe the guy knew him and it was a coincidence. And he was trying to totally rationalize it out. And I laughed at him. And I kind of just called him a closed-minded, bigoted Baptist. He's my brother. I mean, I can say anything to him. And I love him. I love him dearly. He's a great man. And he has his own way that he relates to God. And I have no... But as a brother, you tease him and you poke him and whatnot. But I just thought when the card came in and said Ray was reaching down and saying hello. I was thinking about my talk tonight, and so much of, over the years, the messages that I seem to repeat, and they're really derivations of the same kind of idea, is your own personal narrative. You know, what is your narrative about you? And Jesus made a very interesting and powerful statement. I think it's one of the most powerful in the entire Bible. He says, as a man thinketh, so is he. And so if you think you're a bum, you're going to be a bum. If you think you're limited in this way or that way, guess what? You're going to be limited in this way or that way. You get to define exactly your limitations. And I'm always amazed at the Apostle Paul, who wrote much of the New Testament, about his life and his backstory. And all this, when you read a screenplay or you go to a movie, there's always a backstory of the character. And in a movie script, you'll see little hints of it along the way. For example, there's a scene and, you know, the father and son meet. I actually wrote the screenplay one time, and they meet at this fancy restaurant, and the father says to the son, so how's your mother? Meaning that's a clue that the father and mother weren't together and that there was some tension because of the way it was said. So there's the backstory. And so the Apostle Paul had a backstory. And his backstory was that he was a very religious man. He was one of the 70 most powerful men in Israel. He was on the Sanhedrin. He knew the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, inside and out, upside and down. He memorized them, and he had his theology like this. It was this way. And so when Jesus came along and started speaking about light and having a relationship with God and claiming truth, that it wasn't the mountain that you worshipped at, it was that you worshipped in spirit and truth. Words started getting around, and it didn't fit into the apostle, well, Saul at the time, his picture of who the Messiah was. And so he was so powerful, and he was so zealous, that he was conspiring to kill the Christians of the early days. So here's this man who was a formidable guy. And I believe he was, he had a strong will. His intentions were righteous, is to the degree that he could understand that. And one day, walking down a road, a light from heaven blinds him. And he looks up and he says, oh, Lord, is that you? And he says, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And so outside of this book knowledge, this doctrine, the apostle, Saul, had this experience that was so real that it changed his life. And I know when I came to this church, I was I had a bumpy ride with my own father, and we didn't really have closure at the end days. I hadn't seen him but a couple of times in the last 10 years of his life. And got a call that he some complication, and he was basically on his deathbed. And I went down there, and he had tubes in him, and he couldn't talk. And I remember I was devastated, because I was in that screenplay that I wrote. It was that the father and son got back together at the end, and man, they were partners and they were buddies. And that was my fantasy life. Didn't happen. My dad passed away, and we were not on good terms. And I remember these words coming out of my mouth with all of these tubes in them, and I just said, you know, Dad, you're a good man. You did the best you could. And the words that were coming out of my mouth, they weren't mine, because I didn't believe that. I thought he was a creep. And I'm just being honest. And I was hurt, and I was rejected because I was exiled at Christmas. My daughter would be invited to Christmas, but I wouldn't be invited to Christmas. That kind of a thing. And so it was very difficult in that kind of an environment. And I remember when I said that to him, and he was just like in this comatose state, is that when I said, "You're a good man," he's laying on this bed, and he went, "No." And it was as though I became his confessor. He was saying, "Look, I know that I didn't measure up to what you needed or that I really wanted." That in this life, he was, he came into it with all of his own fears and deficits and stuff that from his past limited him in certain ways. It was very difficult for me for a lot of years, and you know, you get that victim things, and it's, well, I can't because of this or because of that. And as I get older now, and I actually appreciate him a lot more, because the things that he did give to me were tremendous, you know, and the experiences that I went through basically pushed me down this road of spirituality, of seeking an answer that is above and beyond our environment, our five senses, as it were. And I was filling out my membership application, and after 14 years, I'm applying to join the church, and I asked Andrea Dare if she would, you know, sponsor me as one of the three, and she says, yeah, and this is just the other day on Facebook, she says, I'd be happy to. I remember I gave you your first message, like some 14 years ago. And I thought, yeah, I remember it. And it was right here. It was right in this room. And it was from my father. And there's a lot of closure that happened for me, which was a very needed and important thing. And so as I look at the life of the Apostle Paul, thinking that he was right, being hard-headed, and having to have an experience where he literally had to surrender all of the ways that he thought things should go and be, you know, I thought to myself, kind of the way it was with me. I went through more of a gradation of, you know, being a strong fundamentalist, and man, you got to do these things, and if you go to church more, you got to be good and whatever. But as time went on, I realized that at the end of the day, it's about surrender. At the end of the day, it's what fills your mind that creates the life that you live. And if you can control your thoughts, you will control the direction. Well, the direction in one sense. But I want to talk about a verse. And I like to deconstruct different verses because sometimes they seem so harsh. And one that Paul said in Philippians 2:12, he says, you know, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. I know in this church we don't like those words. And I thought, well, let's take a stab at this one. Let's see if we can unfold these words and kind of see maybe where Paul was coming from. And so here's this man that was this righteous man, and he was powerful, and he was top of his trade. He was in the top political, theological class. And all of a sudden, he forsook it all, and it took him 18 years to re-figure out what he believed. 18 years. And the church, the believers that he was out to kill, and that they were afraid of him, they were real hesitant about him. So he had to become this servant. He was a tent maker. And so he would go around and he'd have a profession and a trade, but then he would share this gospel. And I'm thinking to myself that in his mind, because of his past, he was saying, I got to get it right. For so long, I didn't have it right. I had these preconceptions about what was right and what was wrong, but it wasn't until I experienced God that I experienced this light from heaven. And it doesn't happen that way for everybody, but it happened that way for him. It happened a different way for Peter. It happened a different way for you, and a different way for you, and a different way for you. God meets us in different places based on what our needs are. And we can't put a rubber stamp on it. We can't put a particular, salvation prayer of which I prayed, and it meant a lot to me and it impacted me. But you can't put a rubber stamp on how people connect with God. It's bigger than a box. And so he says, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Get it right. And then this whole idea of salvation, and I've shared this many times with you before, is that the word salvation in the original language is the picture of an ocean, a ship, basically, that crashes on the rocks and breaks into 1,000 pieces. And the idea of salvation is of putting that ship back together one piece at a time. It's also shown in the Bible and the scriptures of a potter and a broken pot. It's kind of the idea of gluing it back together. And isn't that so much the case, is that we go through life and we have a ding here and a bruise there, and we have things that happen to us that kind of, they scar us. They create memories, and some of them not particularly good memories. And so Paul's saying, I want to get this thing right. I want to get this idea of wholeness right. I want to control what's in my mind, and I want to be in that surrendered place before the living God and experience this love that he's got. I want to be a vessel for him. And rather than being this doctrinaire with all of these very strong little rules, and I know plenty of them, I want to be this vessel of light and this vessel of love. And I find it really interesting how our state of mind, sometimes we come in and we're depressed, and you meet people and they're going through tough stuff, and if you could just wave a magic wand and change their state, the key to it is, how do you control the thoughts that you allow in your mind? Paul said again, he said, take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. And Jesus basically taught us that that he was the light of the world, and that we're little lights. That he was a vessel, that's we embody that light that God works through us. He says that we're his sons and daughters, that we lack for nothing. What we lack is what we limit in our mind. And so I've had a couple of experiences I want to share with you, two people. One, a fellow that's came through my life for about a month, and horrendous background, just tremendously tragic. And I tried to work with him, long and short, he couldn't get out of his past. And the blame kept him in his past, in his conditioning. And he couldn't stay present. He kept going back to why he couldn't do this thing and why he couldn't do that thing. There's some payoff there for him. And ultimately, he was working for me a little bit, and I had to let him go. Whoop. This is my mother calling. I've got to, like, do this thing. I'm so sorry. Mom, I'm at church. Well, there goes my notes. Okay. Oh, well. I have to just wing it now. And I had to let him go because he got into these very dark places, and it wasn't a healthy kind of a thing. And I compare that experience with an experience about, gosh, it's probably 6 or 7 years ago. I went up to a place, I was invited to tour a place in Los Angeles called the Dream Center. Have any of you heard of it?
Yes.
Just a phenomenal place. Two young guys, 19 and 20, 20, 21, they got this vision from God, and God told them that 20-foot old hospital that the Catholic Church owned, and it was kind of run down in this slummy neighborhood in Los Angeles, that they were supposed to open this dream center and help people. And they went to the nuns and they said, "We want to buy it." And they said, "Fine, it's $20 million. We don't have it." And then they shared with the nuns what they wanted to do with it. And the nuns kind of got excited and said, "Look, we'll sell it to you for $1.8 million, I think it was. Don't quote me. But you've got to come up with $500,000 in 30 days. Two kids broke. And 30 days later, they had $500,000, and they started this ministry, and they literally are a place for homeless training. They would go out in vans on Hollywood Boulevard and take offer some of the young girls and boys, for that matter, that were prostituting themselves and under the thumb of their pimps, as it were, a home, protection, and a ride right there. And they would tell stories about how they'd have to take a while to build this relationship and kind of this trust thing. And they told one of the stories, one of many, where one young gal said, okay, I'll go, and jumps in the van. And the pimp got ticked off because that was his payday. And they're racing from Hollywood Boulevard back to this dream center. And lo and behold, in the dream center, there's a lot of characters. And, I mean, they're tatted up, and these were guys from the hoods that had this experience with Christ, and they were like a family, and so they're driving in, and you've got this this whatever, this is the red velvet Cadillac, that's a image, and out on the lawn come all the guys from inside the dormitory, and all of a sudden that car turned around and fled the other way because it was protection. And so they did these incredible things. And I remember in the neighborhood, they said that the murder rate went down something like 87%. And the lawns were mowed. And it was an incredible transformation. And I went to one of their church services. It was a synagogue? It was some church building, and it was in this bad neighborhood. And they basically were gifted it. And they've got the most incredible music program. I think even some of the kids went on American Idol, and they're very musical. And some of the big stars would go down, and they've got recording studios, and it's a dream center. If you want to, what's your dream? It's kind of like that movie Pretty, what's your dream? That guy in the beginning and the end. And it was so touching to me that when we walked through I guess it was the dorm, they would have these young people, and they would get up and they would share their testimony, quote unquote, where they came from. And there's a young gal that was probably, gosh, I don't even know, maybe late teens. And she'd had a lot of bumps and bruises. And she says, you know, this is what my story is. And she says, you know, we're not allowed to talk about our past except when we give our testimony to help someone. Because if we do, it takes us to a place that we no longer are. And I want you to think about that. It takes us to a place where we no longer are. Where we are is in this moment, in this present. We're in a place where if we control our thoughts and we understand that the living God loves us, has a plan for us, has good things for us, has a community that we can get involved with, our present can be a beautiful thing. But if we allow ourselves to go back to whatever that place is, in the rear view mirror, I call it, all of a sudden we can become our own victims. We can get in that place where we're disempowered. Rather than being empowered, we can be disempowered. And so I'll close with this thought. We need to be a people of faith that walk. And sometimes, you know, you feel stuck in life. It's almost as though if you're not moving forward, you know, your direction might change, but you have to be moving forward. It's like a ship in the water. If the ship's not moving forward, the rudder has no bearing. But God wants you to be moving towards something that's not in the past, that's in the future, something that glorifies Him and fulfills your ultimate gifts. And you know what? It's unlikely you're going to end up at that point that you're pointed towards, but if you're moving towards it, He's going to shift the direction and He's going to open up doors for you and for me that we never thought possible. And I think about my own life. You know, I was disinherited, and you know, I had my few bumps and bruises early on. And the things that I've learned and the beauty that I've experienced because of that took me in a totally different direction. And now look at me. I'm sitting here talking to you guys. I would never have been in this place, in this beautiful place, were it not for the bumps and bruises. But I had to get moving. I had to get forward thinking. I had to get out of the past. And so I just want to encourage all of you to, you know, keep your eyes upward and forward and control the thoughts. Challenge your thoughts. Talk to your thoughts. When you have limiting thoughts and beliefs come into your mind, talk to them. Say, I don't think, no. That one doesn't work. And I was going to bring it's a Hobbesian sphere, and I forgot it. It would have been a great example, but it's one of these spheres that it shrinks and it opens. Have you ever seen those? It's kind of a spherical thing. And so it crunches down like this, and then it opens up. And this is like your brain. And so I want you to visualize your thought pattern as all these thoughts going through. And I have this problem that when something freaks me out and I don't control it, I ruminate on it. And it gets inside of my brain, and it goes around and around and around and around and around. And you have the conversation with yourself, not once or twice or 10 or 12 times. And sometimes you need to have your conversation, figure out what, you know, what am I going to do? But when it gets there and it's 1,000 times, it's a little obsessive. So think of the thoughts, whatever they might be, allow them just to go right through like a freeway. Only hold on to those thoughts that are going to empower you and move you forward. Those thoughts that show your full potential, those thoughts that make you want to be a loving, contributing kind of a person. You know, because God's got such incredible plans, and it's so neat to see how God works in each of our lives and all the God stories that we hear. And I'm just really excited, and I'm really blessed to be part of you guys. Thank you.